Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm Vanessa Lowry and your host for today's show. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work, the book they've written, are in the process of writing, or they intend to write someday. Our regular host, Tim Morrison, is traveling. He's up in Akron, Ohio with his wife and mother-in-law and visiting some family, and I'm grateful that he's letting me fill in. He also just called me and reminded me that today was the one-year anniversary of the first time I guest hosted his show. So it's exciting that I was able to be here on the one-year anniversary. And today we have Andy Lowe as my guest host. And in addition to co-hosting Right Here, Right Now, he's an important member of the Business Radio X team and hosts several shows, including Renegade Radio on Business Radio X. Good morning, Andy.
Hey, Vanessa. So I understand that the challenge today is if we do a better job than the normal show, then we might oust Dr. Tim, and you and I will just start running things here from now on. Is that right?
No, I know he's listening in, so we can't really say that. So you're going to get me in trouble here. But it is going to be a fun show, and I'm excited about being here and having Andy here with me. Today, we're going to be talking about marketing and promotion before and after your book is published. Many authors believe that writing a book is the hardest part, but that's really only the first step. There's many ways to effectively promote your book, and today's guests are author Lisa Earle McLeod and public relations expert Mimi Schroeder. They wanted to make sure I was saying her name correctly. They will share their thoughts on what has proven successful and what has changed over the last few years. We're going to talk first with best-selling author Lisa Earle McLeod. She's a sales leadership consultant and highly sought-after keynote speaker. Her most recent book, The Triangle of Truth, was named a top five business book for leaders by the Washington Post. Over 10 years ago, Lisa authored Forget Perfect. The book continues to resonate with readers, and this past September, Forget Perfect was featured on the Today Show and the NBC Nightly News. In 2007, Finding Grace When You Can't Find Clean Underwear was published. It's a collection of Lisa's humor essays, and it's the only book ever endorsed by Irma Bombeck's daughter, Betsy, who said, "Lisa McLeod is channeling my mother." Lisa writes leadership commentary for Forbes.com, and in addition, her syndicated column, How Smart People Can Get Better at Everything, appears in daily newspapers and popular websites. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi, Vanessa. It's great to be with you.
Well, I know that you're traveling today, so I appreciate you calling in. And as we can see... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, for you, dear, anything.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. As we can see from your intro, you're a prolific writer. So I'm curious how you're able to work writing into everything else that you do. Do you write every day, or what is your schedule for writing?
It's rather haphazard. When I first got into this, I started as a writer because I had little kids, and I either wanted to start a speaking business or write a book. And I had little kids, and so writing a book was the thing that I could do. Now, when I go out and work with organizations, and I'm on the road a lot as I am today, it's a little bit more challenging. But I do probably tend to write for a good hour every day. And I have a new book coming out in October, and one of the challenges that I set for myself was to wake up at 6:30 every morning and write for an hour.
Oh, wow. So right when you come out of bed and are fresh, you're able to get your brain working.
Right. Because I realized, I have a little quote that I say to myself, what would someone who wants to write a great book and have it be a bestseller do? Well, I think they'd wake up at 6:30 in the morning.
Well, and I think if your why is big enough, it's easier to figure out the how of how you're going to make it happen.
Right. That's exactly right.
So your latest book, The Triangle of Truth, seems to be a really different type of book than your first two books. Can you kind of describe what that topic is and why you wrote this book when you did?
Well, for a long time, when I did, and I'll give you a little bit of background, when I wrote Forget Perfect, I was working as a sales consultant. And I wrote Forget Perfect. It was a self-help book for women because I felt like we were all trying to make ourselves crazy trying to be perfect. And the reality was the happiest times of our lives were when we knew that we were making a difference, when we were connected to other people and we knew we were making a difference. So that was the premise of that book. And then I started writing this newspaper column, and I did Finding Grace, which was a set of humor essays. But what The Triangle of Truth did is it really brought together this bent I have towards understanding why people do the things we do and why we act the way we act. And it pulled that together with a more business-like perspective, from a leadership perspective. Because where I got the idea to write The Triangle of Truth was I saw the same problem happening in a lot of places. I saw this either-or thinking I'm right, you must be wrong. And I saw it in personal relationships and in business. So I wanted to write a book that addressed the root problem, which is the I'm right, so you must be wrong mentality, versus just specifically tying it to business or personal relationships. Because I figure we solve that problem, we can solve all the other problems.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I get your newsletter, and I'm connected with you on Facebook, and so I saw some of the information that you sent out about a special promotion that you did for the Triangle of Truth that had to do with members of Congress. So can you describe what that was and how that idea came about?
Well, it actually came from a reader. So when I would go out and I would do these workshops and talk about this either-or way of thinking and how in companies it's the finance people versus the sales people, how it's men versus women, and how we get so blinded to our own, we're so focused on our other point of view, on our point of view, that we're blinded to any truth that the other person may be seeking. So inevitably, when I start talking about this and I talk about either-or thinking and black and white thinking and ignoring anything, you know, relevant on the other side, someone always says, you should take this book to Congress. You should take this book to Congress, because that's like the most glaring example we have of dysfunctional behavior as a result of black and white thinking. And so people kept saying that, people kept saying that. And so then somebody started a Facebook group, The Book That Will Save Congress. And then I talked to the publisher. People had sent requests to publishers, we want to get this book to Congress. And so the publisher said, you know what? We will actually donate a book for every member of Congress. So they said, but you need to find a way to get them there. So I looked into it, and it's really difficult to ship things to the congressional offices because they have to go through all the security. But actually what happened was I talked to my congressman, and he supported us, and I went up to Washington with a whole team of people, and we hand-delivered a book to most of the members of Congress. Now, that was a year ago, and as best I can tell, I don't think that many of them have read it, because I'm still seeing the same behavior. So what I'm working on next is to go back and do a training program.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. So how did you feel like that the promotion, because I know that you had a way that readers could actually nominate their congressperson to get a book.
Right, they did. And you would not believe how many people did that. So I know that the people in this audience are concerned about book promotion. One of the things that happened with this particular book is this came about very organically. And I think that's one of the important things to note, is really listen to your readers and go with their suggestions. Because this ended up being a great promotion for us. And it didn't really start that way. It just started as a great idea from some readers. And it ended up being something that got a lot of national attention. But it's almost like when you try and manufacture those things, they seem not to work.
So what do you recommend that authors do to be able to listen to their readers? What are some ways that they can do that?
Well, one of the things I can tell you, having been someone that's done this for a long time, I made some really critical mistakes in the beginning that I would not make again. So one of the big mistakes I made was with my first book, I had a big six publisher. And they said, oh, we handle the promotion. And that was a huge mistake on my part to assume that they were going to handle it, because they've got lots of other books. They've got, you know, other priorities. They've got thousands of authors. First thing I wish I'd done differently was I wish I'd started promoting my book 6 months before it came out. And we all think that we're going to get on the Today Show and those things can happen. But the best place to start is with your clients and with your family and friends. And literally have those early readers give you feedback, start getting support from your family and friends on Facebook. Make sure your website is up long before your book comes out. And one of the things we're doing on this next book I have coming out in October, which is called Selling with Noble Purpose, we are presenting it in advance to a number of our clients. And so we'll see if this works. We should have advance orders from a lot of clients. And that is a big deal. One of the things I did with Forget Perfect was I gave copies to all of my friends. And one of my friends said, after I'd given away all these copies, said, you shouldn't have given us copies. You should have made us buy the copies. We should have been first in line. And I wish I had done that differently.
So when you're with this new book that's coming out in October with the advanced copies, are you offering them a special incentive to buy advanced copies, like a special price or bonus materials or something like that?
What we're doing is I've got a bunch of advanced copies for my from my publisher that I am, instead of sending all my advanced copies to members of the press, we're actually sending them to potential clients.
Okay.
And we're sending them to VPs of sales and saying, if you'd like to do a bulk buy to come out right, to, you know, get these right when the book comes out, we're going to offer them a special deal. So that drives those early sales. And that is really important for trying to promote a book, is driving those early sales.
And do you package your books in with some of your keynote speaking engagements?
I do.
That's part of the fee or an additional extra that they can get in addition?
Yeah, we typically do. And most successful events I've had have been where I did the keynote, everyone got a copy of the book, all the books were signed, and it makes a great event for the client and also for me. Because, you know, for me, I'm also a reader, and nothing is more exciting to me than to go hear someone speak another signed copy of their book. So it makes it really special.
Well, and it reinforces what you've heard from the speaker, as well as it's more information than they're able to put into a 45-minute, hour-long keynote address.
Right. So. But it is an ongoing thing with book promotion. That was one of the things I learned. I finally got Forget Perfect after a year or two. I finally got on Good Morning America with Forget Perfect. And I thought that would be this big transformational event. And it wasn't. It was big, but it was just one more thing. And that's what I've come to realize, is in this ADD world that we live in, you need to do one thing, then one thing, then one thing, then one thing. We all think we're going to have this big breakthrough thing, but it's almost never that. It's lots and lots of little things. And the author should start with their own circle of influence.
So it sounds like it's a combination of having a plan for promoting your book and then also being flexible with that plan to be able to incorporate new things as you get feedback from
right.
readers and clients and that kind of thing.
Right. And I would also, you know, one of the things is kind of this push-pull thing, because we've all probably gotten these long emails from people saying, please go buy my book on this day so I can be an Amazon bestseller, or please send this out to your list and promote my book. And quite frankly, we get tired of those because they come across as very, very self-serving. So yet, as an author, you still need to promote yourself. So one of the things that I always recommend that I try and model myself is just be very straightforward and honest and be appreciative. Because a lot of the push letters I get are just these total push letters.
Right.
They don't have that expression of gratitude in them. And also, always be mindful that you're there to serve the reader, not the reverse.
Well, Lisa, I have a question in that regard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because we hear things like this a lot, but I'm just curious if you have any insight as to what readers out there actually think. So when you talk about this push marketing, as authors, I often hear people talk and say, hey, we feel like this is a little self-serving or you shouldn't do that. But yet, if it pushes their book to number one and the listener base responds and they do hit the top of Amazon, clearly it's a strategy that is effective and accomplished
right.
what it was set out to do. So how do you know when to go that path and when to back off and do it in a different manner?
Well, and I think, and you bring up a really good point, because I think it's not that you shouldn't promote your book, and it's not that you don't want to try and get your friends and your family and people like that to help you out. It's the tone in the way that you ask them. And it's also one of the things that I've found very effective is we always give something away. So we always give a chapter away and try and write really intriguing copy and say, a lot of people have found this helpful. Here's a chapter. I'd really appreciate it if you could forward this on to your friends. It would really help me a lot. But what happens is that's going to get a better response than these letters that I get that are like, I'm going for number one on Amazon. I need you to send this out today. You know, those might have worked in the beginning, but we're so besieged with those that when they smack of that, help me, help me, help me, it doesn't garner the kind of response. But if you can put something forward first and give before you get and say, okay, I'd like to give everybody a free chapter of this. I really love it. If you could send this out to your friends and you could post this on Facebook, it would help me a lot. And I think people will enjoy this chapter. I appreciate your help. You know, that's going to get a better response from people.
Well, and Lisa, I know that you talked about this a little bit earlier, but a lot of authors believe that if they're traditionally published, that they won't be involved in the marketing and promotion of their book, that the publisher is going to handle all of that. So mm-hmm. can you just talk a little bit more about how what your publisher has done versus what you've done on your own. And you mentioned that earlier that you wish you would have started doing things on your own sooner.
Yeah,
so.
I completely wish I had done things on my own. The thing you have to understand about a major publisher is your book is a product. Your book, they have invested in your book, and they've also invested in a lot of other books. And in all likelihood, if you are a first-time author or even a second-time author, they've invested a lot more in other books than they have in yours. So whereas they may have made a $10,000 or $20,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 investment in your book, they've got a couple million in, you know, Stephen King's book. And so that's the one that they need to have sell. So that's where their publicity resources are going. So the thing that an author needs to understand is the publisher will tell you, don't worry about publicity. Many times they'll tell you that because they don't want you to get in their way and mess things up, because a lot of authors bungle it. But the thing that I wish I had done was read some of the books about publicity, which I ended up doing, and then done it in a very skillful way. So, for example, one of the things you can do if you have a traditional publisher is, and one of the books I like is The New Rules of Marketing and PR. That's a good book, is prepare press releases and send them to your publisher and say, I thought you would find this helpful. Do as much of the work as you possibly can for them. If you know anybody in the media, do your own pitches. Because what you'll find is if you're good at it, then as you do more, the publisher will do more.
So I know that you have a consulting firm that specializes in sales force and leadership development. So how has writing and publishing your books impacted your business?
It's had a dramatic impact on the business. And I'm just going to be frank with everybody in the call. If you want to really establish yourself as a thought leader in a particular area, you have got to have a book. Now, you may self-publish it the first time, but you have got to have a book. And it's the ultimate calling card. So for me, the book is one component of my business. I don't have designs on making a grandiose living as a best-selling author. What the book does, and the current book, the last book, is they continue to put me out there as a thought leader, and then people start to call me as opposed to me having to call them. That's what the book does for you. It's the most effective marketing you could possibly have. Having said that, I read some of these self-published books, and they're just such an obvious marketing push that they don't make me want to call the person at all. So the book has to serve the reader. If you can write a good book, whether you self-publish it or you get a commercial publisher, you can write a good book that really does serve the reader. That will dramatically improve your business if you use it the right way.
Well, Lisa, thank you. And I can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can buy copies of your book?
Oh, yes, I'm supposed to be the sales expert. I probably do that. My website is triangleoftruth.com. And there is a link on there where you can buy the book. We just usually direct sales to Amazon, but if people want to do bulk buys, there's a contact button on there, and they can send an email directly to me.
And I know that you're going to mute out for a little bit since you're on the move, and we're going to be talking to our next guest in the studio, but we're hoping that we're going to be able to bring you back into the call a little bit later in the show. So if that works, we'll talk to you some more, and if that doesn't work, then we won't. But
yeah, I'll jump back on in about 15 minutes if that
great.
Works for you.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll connect back with you in just a few minutes.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. Our next guest today is Mimi Schroeder. She's the founder of Max Communications, a public relations firm specializing in the promotion of authors and their books. Prior to starting her own firm, she served book authors in the roles of publicity manager for Peachtree Publishers, book reviewer for the Pensacola News Journal, and various public relations and community relations positions within the book industry. So welcome, Mimi.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So Mimi has actually been on Right Here, Right Now several months ago with Dr. Tim, and so it's great to have you back. And you were here with one of your clients, and we've had several of your clients on the show over the last few months. So it's great to have you here to specifically talk about promotions.
It's getting to feel like family.
I know it is. So you've worked with really an impressive variety of clients over the years. What are some musts for promotion that every author needs to do?
Well, I really push having a book launch party, because it's a way to get a fun start to your promotions. You can invite all your friends and family and have cocktails and serve food and speak to the group and have giveaways and prizes. and it's just a great way to kick off the whole book campaign.
That's a great way to start any sales process, right? Add some cocktails to the mix.
I think
watch the wallets open up.
That's right. Can't lose. It's fun for everybody.
Well, and it's nice to have an event to kind of culminate all this work that you've put into getting the book written and published, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when this book comes out, it's like giving birth to a baby, and then a lot of work starts. It's not over with the publication of the book, unfortunately. You have a lot of marketing and promotions to do, and like Lisa said, even if you have a Big Six publisher, you still have to become a PR expert yourself. You've got to do a lot of work, no matter who you publish with.
Well, I know, just talking to a lot of authors, the publishing industry continues to kind of morph and change, and a lot of publishers are looking for authors, even if they're traditional publishers, are looking for an author that has a platform of people or already has people that are interested in what they have to say.
Yeah, it's very important when you're, if you're putting a book up with an agent, you have to demonstrate that you have a platform, that you have followers, you have a website, you've got, you're on social media. It's all very important in order to be considered by a publisher.
So how does having a clearly defined target reader of a book affect the promotion plan that you develop for an author or that an author develops?
Well, you know exactly what kind of media might be interested in that author. For instance, if it's a children's nature book, you're going to be targeting children's magazines that have to do with nature, things that are green, things that are environmentally friendly. If you're pitching to the media, like the newspapers, you're looking for those science and nature editors and authors. It's just very important to have a clear picture of who might be interested in this particular book.
And do you find that a lot of your authors have more than one target that require some separate promotion to the different media contacts?
At times, you might have somebody who is interested in promoting their book to nature and also maybe a spiritual component. And so you would go back and forth between the two. You would pitch to both of those both of the media in those markets.
And so you would have a little bit of a different pitch that you would craft for each of those, as opposed to having one universal thing that you're sending to both targets. You would have crafted a little differently for one versus the other.
Right. You have your basic media release, and that first paragraph you would custom design for who you're sending it to. I always custom everything I send to each individual media person. I don't believe in just sending out mass emails, because I don't think they work as well as spending the time to devote to particular individual media people.
And I know we chatted for just a few minutes before we went on air, and you were mentioning that you are finding more of your clients are self-publishing now. So what's the difference between an author that is traditionally published versus self-published as far as the way you would promote them or the types of things that you would do to promote them?
Well, if it was a traditionally published author, I would work with their in-house PR person so that we don't contact the same media. You don't want to duplicate their efforts. And I would just concentrate on the things that they weren't doing. With a self-published author, you're going to be doing everything. I start out with doing a press kit, which contains a biography, a synopsis, endorsements, a Q&A, so the media could see samples of things that they could talk about with the author. I include a picture of the author and the cover of the book. And then we put together media lists of what media might be most interested, and we pitch the media. I look at awards that book might be good to promote for, and I do the book promotion for book awards. I propose them for conferences. It goes on and on.
Well, and I know a lot of that there are a number of different contests for self-published, independent published books to be submitted for awards. How mm-hmm. effective do you think winning an award is as far as a promotional hook?
I think the awards can be pretty effective. A lot of people are intrigued by a gold sticker or a gold medallion on the front of your book. So if I think that the author has a fairly good chance of winning, or at least a possibility, and it's not terribly expensive, we'll usually propose that author for a few awards. They do come with a price, but some are definitely worth the price, I think.
And I know some of the entry information with some of the awards is that it has to be published within the last year.
Yes.
So if an author's going to do it, they have to kind of be on top of that.
That's why it's very important for an author not to hesitate to contact a publicist or to think about doing PR, because the timing for awards is very important.
So on your website, you've got a lot of great information on your website. And on your website, you have an author questionnaire. And I noticed that one of the questions is, has your book been released? So what are examples of actions that an author should take to promote their book before their book launches?
Well, they could get together a list of media contacts, if they have any, bookstore contacts, bookstores that are in their neighborhood. And if they can accumulate the name of the community relations manager and the phone number and the email, that's all very helpful. It saves me a lot of time.
So when they're paying you by the hour, anything they can do to save mm-hmm. your time saves them dollars.
Right. And it's less tedious for me. So it's definitely appreciated.
So is there an advantage to an author directly contacting the contact person at a bookstore, the media relations person, or is it better for them to have a third party person like a PR professional making those contacts for them?
As a rule, it's better to have the PR person do it, but we talk, and if they happen to know this community relations manager or the manager of the bookstore, and they've already talked to them that their book is coming out, then we usually agree that it's better for them to contact that bookstore themselves.
And you talked a little bit a few minutes ago about press kits and the kinds of things that authors needed to have in their press kit. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's important for it to be a printed press kit, or are most things sent electronically at this point?
Definitely electronic.
So with the things that they have in their press kits, if you could just mention again what some of those key things are. I know you talked about synopsis and endorsements and Q&A. What would the Q&A actually entail?
Well, it would be, depending on their book, you know, it would be questions that if a media person or somebody has actually read the book, they could ask those questions. They would be things that would encourage discussion, create interest in the audience in that book. And if you include the answers, then the media person knows that this is something that would really be of interest to their readers.
So it sounds like it kind of shortcuts a little bit for the media,
yeah,
too, that in case they haven't had a chance to read the book, they'll sound informed.
Absolutely.
When they're asking
it,
the questions.
It primes the pump, too.
Mm-hmm. So curious with the, I know that there's a, book trailers is kind of a newer promotional item for authors. Do you find that that's an effective thing for authors to create a book trailer for their book?
At this point, I would say yes. They're fairly new, and we haven't seen that many, so the jury's still out, so to speak. But I think that anything that is visual that a potential reader could see when they go on the website, and it creates a feel for the book. It's very, it's kind of an emotional thing.
And I find that it's easy for people to share those too, that it's a great way to, you know, mm-hmm. share things, you know, share a book trailer on Facebook and on other social media.
And on YouTube.
Types of sites.
Sure, sure. Another tool I really like is doing a Q&A, a video Q&A, and add that to the website. And you can have, the questioner can just be somebody off camera, and then you have the camera on the author and ask them questions. And it's a great way for somebody who's visiting the website to to feel like they know the author, and would they be interested in getting that book?
Oh, that's wonderful. So I'd like for us to talk a little bit about book signings and author appearances. How effective do you think those are in the journey of a book promotion?
I think it's a necessary evil. book signings can be dreadful, not to scare away authors, but I've hosted a lot of book signings, and you know, we've had thousands at book signings, and we've also had zero. And there's nothing worse for the author and the bookstore to have nobody there. So you really have to sort of do things to guarantee an audience. For regular book signings, I would definitely encourage the author to send emails to all their friends and family and encourage them to come. I would check with the bookstore and see what kind of publicity they're doing for the signing, because some of them don't do too much. So you might want to work with your PR person to make sure that you're doing some media for the book signing. But there are things you can do when you get in there. You can have a table with a nice tablecloth. You can have flowers on the table. You can dress nice. You can maybe wear something sparkly, because that might attract attention. And just the way you stand and how you look at the people who are going by, you try to make eye contact, and you don't want to, you know, lasso them or anything, but you try to get them, encourage them to come over and just talk to you, and maybe hand them a bookmark or ask them if they'd like to just take a look at the book and start to create a conversation. One thing you don't want to do is eat at the table. I've heard some horrible nightmares of authors who were eating while they were trying to do a signing, and that's kind of a turnoff, as is turning your back on anybody at the table for any reason. You don't want to do that. You have to be conscious of how you're standing, where your arms are, you know, the expression on your face. You want to make it look like you're really enjoying yourself, whether you are or not.
So creating an atmosphere where people perceive you as being warm and inviting, as opposed to
very much
closed off and just waiting for it to be over.
Yeah, don't look like you're scared. Even if you are, just sort of fake it.
Never let them see you sweat.
Yeah.
So what do you feel like the role in social media plays in the plans that authors should incorporate into their book promotions?
Well, it's very important to have a website. And like Lisa said, have that up before the book is published. Try to get followers to that. And also get on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. You know, do all the regular social media. Blogs are great if you can develop a blog. But you have to make the most of it. You have to use it and send things out weekly or, you know, at least every other week so that people have something to go to and look for.
Mimi, I have kind of a two-part question. When it comes to promoting your book, number one, is it important that people look at their audience? For example, what is the demographic? In particular, I'm kind of thinking in part to this question, age demographic, if you're going after a little older, mature audience versus a younger generation audience. And if that's true, is there sort of an old school, new school methodology for how you reach and promote that audience? I mean, just thinking social media, the younger generation obviously approaches social media very differently, I think, than some of the older generation. And how does that play out for an author?
Well, you might be surprised at how much older authors are using social media, too. The younger market is much more in tune to it. So with the older audience, you want to make sure that you don't rely just on social media. You want to have your print. Your community newspapers can be very helpful. Radio is wonderful.
Yay!
Ding, 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 ding.
TV, if you can get it. It's getting harder and harder to get on any TV shows, especially if you're a self-published author. It's a challenge.
So Mimi, thank you. You've really shared a lot of great information today, and I appreciate you being here. So tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and get in touch with Max Communications and hire you to help them promote their books.
Well, I would love it if they would go to my website, which is maxbookpr.com. And that's M-A-X-B-O-O-K, singular, PR.com.
Great. Thank you. And so we're going to try to bring Lisa back in, and then we're going to open the mics for everybody and see if Andy has any additional questions or if you and Lisa have any questions for each other. So, Lisa, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, yay. Excellent.
Fabulous.
So we've got the mics open for everybody, and does anybody have any additional things they want to ask?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to jump in and lead off here because, Lisa, while we were talking with Mimi, I was perusing the preview of your book on Amazon.com. And I was wondering if you could just kind of share how the Triangle of Truth came about.
Yeah, sure. I can share that. And it's, you know, I think the best books, at least for me, come about organically from the issues that you see and the problems that you want to solve or the stories that you want to tell. And so the way the Triangle of Truth came about for me was I was looking at three different situations. One was I was looking at what was happening in politics in the country. And I want to make it clear, the book is for the individual reader. It's not for a politician. I was looking at what was happening with politics, and I was watching my neighbors just selectively discount each other based on their political affiliation with this either-or way of thinking. The other thing I saw happening was I saw it happening in business. I work with a lot of sales organizations, and what I saw was I saw salespeople consistently so focused on their product that they ignored the customer. And then the other thing that I saw was in personal situations. Now, this is where it gets really good because I've covered politics and I've covered business, and so now this part's about sex.
That's right. That's what I was reading. I'm like, all right, I got to bring this up.
You wanted. I knew that's what you're going for. So what I saw is I write this newspaper column, and one of the dynamics that I would write about was relationships. And perhaps you have experienced this in your own relationship, where one partner says, we need to talk more. We need to talk more. And the other partner says, I think what we need to be doing is having more sex. And so I continued to get letters from people saying, why won't my partner have sex? Why do I want to have more sex? I want to have more sex. I want to be closer. And I would also get letters from other people saying, I want to talk more. I want to talk more. I'll leave it up to you to guess which letters were coming from who. And to be frank, it was also a dynamic that I was experiencing in my own relationship. And what I realized is both partners want the same thing. They just want to be closer. But when we aren't getting our own needs met, but we get in a fear-based way of thinking, we don't realize that our two agendas, sex and talking in this case, are not incompatible. In fact, they're completely compatible. But what happens is we start thinking, just like the politicians, well, why would I even have sex with you? You don't even want to talk to me. We need to talk. We need to talk. I have to get my thing first, instead of realizing that they could both actually happen. Well, maybe not at the same time, but at least in the same evening. And so I thought, if we can sort of dial back what's behind this silo-like thinking that we have, we will literally solve all the problems. So the Triangle of Truth model says, my agenda's on one side, bottom left of the triangle. Your agenda's on the other side, bottom right. And the real solution is not a middle ground compromise. The real solution's at the top of the triangle, which is the lots of sex, lots of talking solution. So that's how the book came about.
So I kind of what I am hearing from your story about this is that authors, it is good for them to pay attention to what's going on in their own lives as well as what's going on around them to find material for their content, to kind of take their perspective on things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly true. And the other thing I think that's important is when it comes to promotion, pay attention to your own habits. Because I think you guys were talking about book signings earlier and how these dismal book signings that no one shows up for, and I can assure you I've had my share of those. Ask yourself, how many times have I been to a book signing? What would it take to get me out to a book signing? And, you know, what happens is we don't pay attention to our own habits. We forget that I get millions of emails. What kinds of things am I likely to pay attention to? Is it, to your point, maybe a compelling, interesting video? Or is it some big, long-winded description of something? And somehow we think that we're different or unique, and we're not. The things that appeal to us are likely going to be the things that appeal to our audience. And so you see this happen all the time where people don't even pay attention to their own habits.
That's a really good point, and I appreciate you bringing that up, Lisa. And we're just about out of time. Mimi, did you have any last thoughts before we head off?
Well, I wanted to ask Lisa, as somebody who's been published by the Big Six, I have a lot of authors who are interested in finding an agent and getting published by a big publisher. Do you have any advice for them?
Yeah. There's two things you need. You need a good platform, and you need great content. And a lot of people say, well, how am I supposed to get a big platform if I don't have a book published? Publishers are looking for someone that already has an audience. So the more you can do, it doesn't have to be a huge audience, but more that you can do to establish your blog, establish your consulting practice, whatever it may be, and demonstrate that you have an audience. And the other thing is, believe it or not, even in today's time, publishers are still looking for good content. The writing counts a lot. They're not going to publish direct. So that's one of the things that I see is people don't spend enough time on their own writing. So the more that you can do now to work on your writing and really think of publishing as one component of your business, it's not the big thing that's going to make or break you. It's just one thing.
So like you were saying earlier at the start of your interview of, you know, what would a best-selling author be committed to doing if they were going to be a best-selling author, and your commitment to write an hour a day and get up at 6:30 in the morning.
And get up and write. You know, the other thing is you've got to recognize you're in two businesses. You're in the writing business and you're in the promotion business. And that's one thing I see a lot of authors are really frustrated and annoyed that they need to be in the promotion business. You got to get over yourself.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, Lisa and for Mimi, for being here. And I know that our clock is on us, so we're going to draw to a close. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for co-hosting and producing our show today.
It's a pleasure as always.
Great being in the studio with you. And thank you to my guests, Lisa Earl McLeod and Mimi Schroeder. Lisa, please share your contact information one more time with our listeners.
It's my website is triangleoftruth.com, and you can reach me at lisa@triangleoftruth. You know, the other thing I did want to add, do you really want your book to be successful? Hire a publicist.
There Thank you. So Mimi, that is a great lead-in for you to share your contact information again.
It's maxbookpr.com.
Excellent. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, how about sending them an email right now to invite them to listen live or download some of our previous shows? Listen to Right Here, Right Now live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern at rightherenow.businessradiox.com or download the MP3 version of all the interviews on the Right Here, Right Now website. I am guest host Vanessa Lowry. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right Here, Right Now.